now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have John Wilner, and John and I are going to go deep, like really deep, into Arizona State and Arizona football for the coming season. Also, news of the day involving Michigan football. What a joke the NCAA is once again. We'll get John's view on that. And also Bill Belichick. John wrote something in his column over the weekend. Of course, his column is up on our website. John contributes quite a bit, nationally syndicated columnist. Kind of an interesting take from John on how, what is going on with North Carolina football and how it impacts the next round of realignment, which will be coming to college football before you know it. That is all coming up with John Wilner. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. Through the years, we appreciate Jeff Mishi and company. I was in a Zoom with them this last week on some cool things they're thinking about doing. We do appreciate their support. Talking some holiday stuff with them. I'm an open book here. So I had surgery, just a little deal. Skin cancer. Had it on Friday. I still feel like somebody's taking a jackhammer to this area. And it was not fun, but it was the right thing to do. They told me, it was like, I don't know, about, it's like 6 weeks ago. What are we at? May 5th? It was like towards the end of March. I just one day noticed this little bump. Like, what is this? So I went in there and they looked at it and they were like, yeah, we need to get in there and get after it. So we got after it, and it was, let me put it to you this way. You have to do this, but I think I'd rather have my teeth cleaned without any, or any dental surgery without Novocaine rather than this, just because of the banging and all that. But it's the right thing to do, and all of us here in Arizona or wherever you're taking in the show across the fruited plain, you have to understand that this is part of the deal with skin, and do your checks. That's all. I'm not being preachy. Just, it doesn't matter how old you are. This is not old guy or young guy. This is, just don't know. All right, so there's that. A little PSA to get it out of the way. I actually, as much as I dislike the NBA regular season, I love what is going on in the playoffs right now. I love how hard teams are playing. I'm not cheering for any certain team. I kind of like watching the Joker play in Denver. I really do. I think Denver is an interesting story because they blew out their coach right before the playoffs started. James Harden. I like James. I remember James is a jeans, shorts, little t-shirt, backpack out there shooting. One day when I'm at ASU and he was on his official visit to ASU, to Arizona State. But you can't deny what's going on with James Harden when it comes to where he's been, how it's gone for him. This isn't hating, it's just a fact. Just a fact. He can't win the big one. It isn't happening for him. And he's been in a lot of different destinations. So I look at the Clippers and say, okay, you can't keep Kawhi healthy, and James came in, and it's the same old story, rinse, repeat. Cannot be a first-round elimination. I like where Minnesota is. I like watching Anthony Edwards. Who doesn't like watching Anthony Edwards? Yes, he talks a lot, but it's fine. That's part of his persona. He goes after it. I think Minnesota against Golden State will be some of the most compelling basketball because will Steph Curry give in to Ant? Will Draymond Green give in to, are these guys just going to go about their business and just say, yeah, you can say or try to do whatever you want to do? Golden State, end of an era, end of a run, or another tough matchup. Minnesota's not ready for a veteran group. It's really intriguing to me. Then you go over and you look at tonight, Boston and the Knicks. I'm going to watch. I will watch. It's going to be probably an 88-85 game. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that it's in the 100s, 110s, thereabouts. But it's Boston and New York. New York cannot figure out how to beat Boston during the regular season. And Jalen Brunson had one of the biggest shots in the history of Knicks basketball. And here you have Boston over there. And Jason Tatum, there's some stuff I've been watching online. of Jason Tatum and Jalen Brunson playing against each other in the high school circuit. It's really interesting. You have a kid like Jaylen Brown, who seems to be overlooked, and yet here he is back in the spotlight. It's always Jason Tatum. Always. So the playoffs are just very, very interesting to me. The hometown nine, known as the Diamondbacks. So I don't know how many more shoulder and arm injuries, fatigue we have to have before somebody raises their hand and says, "What is going on? Is this across Major League Baseball?" Because now it's Corbin Burnes who's down tonight. Corbin Burnes had to fly back on their road trip. Stiffness, tightness in the shoulder. And go down the list of all the players on this team and how many pitchers have been down so far. It's a lot. And you can't just say, well, it's just injuries are part of the game. I am no doctor, but I've covered this stuff long enough to know that there's got to be something that's being done, whether it was in spring training, behind the scenes, that it's not working early on this season. You just cannot have this many injuries and say, well, they just get hurt. If I'm Ken Kendrick, I am livid. I am livid. Didn't think they played well in Philadelphia. Thought they escaped yesterday. Shelby Miller came in and did a well enough job, gets the victory. Diamondbacks go on, and now they're home. This is a litmus test week for the Diamondbacks. And John Woolner will be with us here in a couple moments, but it's a litmus test week for them. In this market, I think there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of enthusiasm. So far, if you look at the National League West, the Giants are the surprise. The Dodgers sit atop. Is this where they start stretching things out? They don't have much pitching that's alive right now on the mound. They have a ton of injuries, too. So when you have the Mets in for three and your ace, Corbin Burnes, is not able to go tonight, I actually like Ryan Nelson. This is his chance to show once again, like, hey, I can be that six, seven inning guy for you tonight and give the bullpen a break. But how long do they go before they decide to do something major here? There's clearly enough talent down on the farm to do something that would impact the big league roster. And the question is, do you need to do it? Remember, last year you missed the playoffs by how much again? So don't tell me these games in May, you just have to figure it out. Then you have the Dodgers in town for four this weekend. I'm actually going to go on Sunday on Mother's Day. And here the Dodgers come in, and usually we know how it goes, as with every team. The Dodgers just smack them around. And there'll be more Dodger fans there than there'll be Diamondback fans. And it'll be an atmosphere that'll be electric charged. But you have seven games over the next week against the Mets, who lead their division, and the Dodgers who lead their division. Litmus test. You come home. You get a lot of enthusiasm going if you have a 4-3, 5-2. Turn around, you go, 3-4, 2-5. Yeah. And at some point, because this has not been a well-oiled machine in really any facet over an extended period of time, if you look to where the season opened, to where they are now, you have a third baseman who has seven errors, he's striking out a ton, but he hits four home runs in a game, and people seem to overlook the big picture. You look and see that there has been some improvement over at first base. That the way that it's gone, you don't miss Christian Walker, you don't miss Josh Bell, but it gives you options with what's gone on over there at first base. Gives you options to go make a deal. If you have to make a deal, and I think we're getting to the point where they should be considering making a deal for some help in their bullpen. Unless things come back structural with Corbin, but I'm just believing that this is a big week and that the owner can't be happy with how the team's performed so far. A lot of errors, a lot of mistakes, just things that haven't been clean. So there, I feel much better now. Beyond that, we will step. Washington D.C. getting the 2027 NFL draft. Just briefly on this. Once again, I would like to know what is the next big event that we are going to have here in Phoenix that we have secured? I know we have the women's Final Four next year. I don't see a Super Bowl on the horizon. I haven't seen a national title game in college football in forever. Yes, there's a semifinal. It's not a final. Okay? You have these mega events that come up for bid, and something like the NFL draft, April, Arizona? What are we thinking? Come on. This isn't that hard. Golf courses, hotels would be full, fans from all across the country. It would be huge. But we're shut out again. All right, John Wilner is next. We have plenty to get into with John today. We're going to go a little bit longer with him. That's on the other side. All right, as always on Mondays, John Wilner, nice enough to drop on in. Wilner Hotline, a big part of what we do here at Sports 360. John, nationally syndicated columnist, chops it up on college football, college sports in general, college basketball. It's always good to get John's opinion on things on a weekly basis. I didn't think that we would lead with scandal, but we will. We're going to start with Michigan. There's another scandal I'll get to. It's kind of off the field there. But Michigan today. The big bad people said, we're going to show you, we're going to give you two games at the start of the season for Sharon Moore. Like,
Yep.
John, come on. This is a, if I'm an Ohio State fan, I am laughing or I'm really angry about this. So.
I think Michigan got away a little lucky here. I mean, two
Yes.
games, and that's self-imposed. So we'll see if the NCAA comes in with more. But the reports are that he deleted more than 50 text messages related to the Connor Scallion scandal from 2 years ago. And that is, you know, that's a no-no for the NCAA to basically tampering with evidence. Two games. Now, they did make one of the two games Nebraska, so that's a conference game, right? But notice that they didn't suspend them for Oklahoma, their big non-conference game, and his alma mater. So they were selective with what they did. You know, they could have, you could have easily justified a couple more games, I think.
Sure.
I feel like Michigan's gotten off easy in some ways with this whole thing, right? Harbaugh got that 3-game suspension 2 years ago. Now Moore's getting two. It was, I think it was so scandalous that and so wrong that they could have easily gotten hit harder. Certainly in Columbus,
Yeah.
they were rooting for more.
Sure.
And Eugene and you know,
Yeah, down the
State
list.
College, absolutely.
When was the last time the NCAA really showed their teeth? And I'm not asking you to like give an example, but I can't think of one right off the top of my head. You and I sat here for a couple of years going through all the nonsense at Arizona State, right? And the
Yep.
NCAA never showed their teeth. Like they are so toothless right now. I think that people just kind of laugh when they say the NCAA is doing this or doing that. And oh, by the way, he's got a coach against against Oklahoma because it's on TV. They're
Yeah.
not going to say he's not here today for that matchup.
Right. That's a good question. They did hit Fordham basketball pretty hard recently.
That's true. That's true.
And that's very NCAA-ish, right? You know, the Michigan's kind of skate, ASU, whatever, but let's hammer Fordham basketball, right? It's like that old Tarkanian line that they're so mad they're going to put Cleveland State on probation.
It's a good
The
point.
issue that they have is it takes so long for them to process and adjudicate these cases, yet the rules are changing so quickly
Right.
that the rules in place when the case begins are irrelevant by the time the case ends. They even admitted recently, and this was about a year ago, you know, somebody on the infractions committee said, you know, we're kind of backing off these postseason bans because the roster turnover is such that none of the players are around anymore from the time that the scandal, the violations occurred to when we're imposing the penalty. So it's really tough for them. They are becoming irrelevant, you know, on an hourly basis.
Okay, let's move over to the other scandal this week. Bill Belichick and his girlfriend. I mean, it's the point
Yeah.
now where Saturday Night Live had them in their, wrote them into their skit. That's
Yeah.
how far this has jumped. And I'm looking to you about what is North Carolina believing? Because this is not where you want to have. This is not Mac Brown.
Not what you signed up for when you hired him, that's for sure.
Right. So what do you think?
Well, the big thing that stands out to me is her involvement in the North Carolina football program. She's on the field during practice. There was a video out, right? He's saying that they have a professional relationship. She's participating in North Carolina football strategic communications decisions in terms of how they are messaging with the media. I don't think the Tar Heels signed up for that. And to me, that's what makes this a story, is she's not a private figure. Their relationship isn't strictly private. He has admitted she's part of his professional dealings. It is fair game on social media, on the news media, right? Now, there's also the actual element of, does it really mean anything in the big picture outside of the walls of Chapel Hill? And I would make the case that indirectly, the whole thing that happened with CBS and everything else with her is a breadcrumb for us to follow, because North Carolina is arguably the key school in the next round of realignment. If you presume that Notre Dame is going to stay independent, then Carolina would be the first pick in a draft, expansion draft between the Big Ten and the SEC. Okay. Not Clemson, not Florida State. North Carolina is a coveted school for both of those conferences. So how North Carolina performs on the football field over the next 5 years could play a role in realignment in 2030. Okay, so now we're re-engineering here. Okay, what do you think her dealings suggest about Belichick's competence level to elevate North Carolina to the top, to, you know, 10-win seasons, to a place where they impact the timing and severity of realignment? I would argue that her involvement suggests he may have lost a little of his edge that he had with the Patriots, that he doesn't have that single-mindedness of purpose that he did, that he is susceptible to distractions that he never used to be, right? We all expected him to come in and say, on to Wake Forest, right? And now you wonder, is he really the same coach that he was with the Patriots if his 24-year-old girlfriend is helping him run the program, which she clearly is involved in the program management? And does that say that he's not ready to take Carolina to the top tier where they have a material impact on realignment? So that is kind of my breadcrumb to 2030. These little things that she's involved in do suggest that he may not be ready to do what we thought he was going to do with the Tar Heels. And that could have an impact coast to coast, because the next realignment wave is going to change everything all the way from Chapel Hill to Pullman and Tucson and Tempe. And so what he does and what she does with the North Carolina program actually matters.
That's really deep. I like that.
It is deep.
I guess when I'm looking at this, this is not going to end well.
Well, there's a lot of people who think it is not. Yeah. And it's a lot more people than thought that, say, 2 weeks ago. Because that CBS, for a lot of folks, that CBS interview with her interjecting, we're not talking about this, right? That's the kind of thing you would have expected him to say. Now, maybe he did say it, and we just didn't get that as part of the clip. But that was a very worrisome/troublesome/interesting development for a lot of people. And now, like, the betting markets would say the likelihood of this thing working out are not nearly as high as they were when he was hired.
Okay, I'm going to do a little bit of journalism teaching here, because I'm curious your stance on this. Whenever I have somebody who says to me, what are you going to ask? I don't do it. You know, this is the wrong show. This is the wrong personality. This is just not, we're not going to script out what we can and cannot ask. And there's been a couple times, John, where I've said to people, yeah, we're not doing that. And they get put off. They get offended. Well, don't you want my A-rated? No, I don't want your A-rated client if they're going to sit there and just sell a book. I'm not doing that. Have you been in that space?
Oh, for sure. And as the Belichick situation goes, I mean, the guy has been in this public spotlight for 25 years, basically, with the Patriots, and then even longer for his previous coaching career. His dad was coach. He knows the moment he agrees to an interview with CBS about a book, it is fair game for them to ask him other stuff. Absolutely fair game. And the interesting thing is that the question that they asked that prompted that response from her is, you know, how did you meet? They have talked publicly about how they met, right? I mean, it was on an airplane, allegedly. So it's not even like CBS was asking something that nobody had ever discussed before. And then the Belichick camp just made it even worse by with that statement saying, you know, we were under the impression that had an agreement that they wouldn't ask about X, Y, and Z. And CBS immediately comes out with there was no agreement, which makes them look bad and prolongs the news cycle on something that is already embarrassing to them and to North Carolina. I mean, if you're Carolina, you're pulling your hair out over this whole thing, and you're just dying to get to the season opener and hoping that there's no other issues that come up with her and him and her family. And if anybody wants to go read that New York Post story, I'm not getting into it here because I don't think it's relevant. But there's some interesting tidbits in that New York Post story. You have to. And you just wonder what else is coming.
John Wilner with us for a few minutes on the field. Let's talk about Arizona State and Arizona. And let's advance the conversation ahead to when we get to mid-August, later part of August, when the season openers begin. I'm going to start with the Sun Devils. Is it ideal to go into this thinking it's the same or not better type of, or it will be a better type of season than what Kenny Dillingham is coming off of? There's the expectation of, they may take a step back because they don't have Cam Scataboo. Well, they have two first-round draft picks in their quarterback and their wide receiver. You know, they start in a space where I think the expectation level here in Arizona is as high as the 97 season after the Rose Bowl. And sometimes you don't hit the mark. I would like your view on ASU.
Well, I think that ASU certainly is positioned better than this time last year in most ways, but the expectations have a way of changing the internal dynamic. It is not the same that it was last. They were playing with house money all of last season, and there's no house money this time. They're going to be targeted by every opponent. They're the favorite. Everything changes with that, externally, internally. Dillingham has not had to deal with that before because he's so inexperienced. I think that they are ready for a step back. Not that they are less talented, but because of the pressures. And we saw that with Arizona last year. Now, Arizona had, there was a big difference. Arizona had changed coaches, but the pressure that was on Noah Fafita and Tetaroa McMillan entering the 24 season, coming off those 10 wins, that's like the pressure that's on Leavitt and Tyson coming off of the Big 12 title and the playoff appearance. So I think those things will have a huge impact. I think they're going to take a step back, but that step back could be to 8 or 9 wins, right?
Right.
That's the thing. It's going to be, if they don't make the playoff, it's going to be looked on as a disappointment. And that's a little bit unfortunate. But at the same time, if you're ASU, you want those expectations because it shows what progress you've made.
Sure. It's part of the expectation that they're going to be playing games in December.
Yeah.
Never mind the fact they've got to go to Ames. Never mind the fact a game at Colorado in late November or mid-November could be a snow game.
Yeah.
Never mind the fact that you're going to go to Mississippi State, who wasn't very good last season, but it was still a tight game. But you've never been down to that part of the country for that type of atmosphere. I'm just looking through each week and saying, you know, you can make the case, and I get it. The pitchforks up, go Devils. The maroon shorts down below the kneecaps. Gold socks above the knees. That crowd is just going to say, we're going to go undefeated. I get it.
Yeah.
Fandom. I get it. But I guess I look at it and say, is a step back not in the number of wins, because that's how it is for me. You and I are aligned on this. They could go win seven games, and I'm not going to say, oh, my gosh, what a terrible season. Because it may come down to a kick or a fumble or a play, just one play. And if you look back to last season, they were in some spaces where it came down to just one play, and it could have been even bigger for them.
Could have been bigger. Every season is decided by four, five, six plays.
Yep.
You know, that's the difference between 10 wins and eight.
Yep.
Or, you know, nine wins and six is just a handful of plays. You need the breaks. You need certainly need breaks with injuries. And we don't know that Tyson and Leavitt are that right now they're top 10, top 20 picks. But if you go back to last May, a lot of players that were projected for the first round of the 25 draft were not even, you know, top three rounds, right?
Sanders.
We got to have to see. Shadur Sanders, right. We got to have to see how things unfold. And Leavitt has only been a starting quarterback for one season. Let's see what happens. It is completely different when the target is on your back, and it's going to be, they're going to get every team's best shot. That changes your entire season.
I like, though, that there is that expectation. What I have seen through the years here, 30-plus years, is if they go 6-5, it's what's wrong. If they go 7-4, what's wrong? If they go 8, there will be a mass bandwagon exodus the minute that this team loses a couple in a row, if that were to happen. And I've even told Kenny this. All you have to do in this town is win, and you're going to have people show up. This is a front-running town. You don't win, they're not going to show up. It's not, oh, they're bad fans. No, they're going to find a way to not go to the stadium when it's 110 degrees in late August and mid-September if the expectation is they're not very entertaining, they're not this, they're not that. And I just look at this whole picture down here and say, I'm more excited for this season to see how they bounce through this year versus what happened a year ago. Last year was house money, John. Last year was sitting here and just saying, this is a great story unfolding right before our eyes. A great story maybe, they had some really tough games that they had to pull out at the very end this year, or it's games that came down to the bitter end. So I think Kenny and his coaching staff will be a lot more focused on them. Some of those guys are going to be in the coaching hiring cycle after this season is complete. How will that impact this program? If they have big success, how many of them leave? If they don't have big success, how many are going to stay or get fired? That's coaching.
It is coaching. It's the same thing with the players too, right? All of a sudden, you know, Sam Levitt's thinking, well, how's this affect my draft stock? Tyson's thinking, how's this affect my draft stock? My NIL value. Sure. All those things are in play and didn't exist a year ago. And that, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with it from the coach's standpoint? How do you deal with it with your leadership council within the program? There's a lot to it. You can have the same core coming back, and certainly, you know, Scatabu's loss is gigantic. He did so much for them, right? He was kind of the eraser on mistakes. But you can have the same essential core, and yet it's a whole different dynamic.
Yeah.
How are they going to deal with that?
And I'm expecting them to have a big season, but I'm, you know, what defines a big season? What is, if they don't play in the CFP, it's a terrible season. Well, I don't know. It used to be the crowd here was, as long as you beat the U of A and you can go 1-11, it's a great year. No, it's
not.
No, it's not. It's ass backwards thinking. All right, so U of A, they open with Hawaii and Weber State. Then they have Kansas State at home, and they go to Iowa State. 2-2. Is Coach Brennan a 1-2 and done in Tucson? Do you think the focus, John, because you've been plugged in down there through the years, is this really a make or break year for him just in his second season?
I think it absolutely is. There's no doubt about that. The fact that their athletic director, Desiree Reed Francois, had to come out with a statement in early December, late November, in support of Brennan after his first year, tells you all you need to know that his job is on the line. What does that mean exactly? Do they have to go to a bowl game, win six games?
Yes.
Probably they do.
Yeah.
Now, what if they are 5-6 and they lose on a 60-yard field goal? I don't, there could be some nuance to it, depending on how they play, depending on the injuries and what happens. But generally speaking, you could set the bar at 6 wins. If he doesn't make a bowl game, he's going to be in big trouble after just 2 years. So if they are 2-2, yeah, the focus is going to be on him. Absolutely, it will be. And, you know, justifiably so, because he and his staff did not do a good job last year. It was a harder season, I think, with injuries and with the roster attrition than many people had initially thought it would be. But they did not do a good job. And he's made some changes on the staff that I think will help them for sure. I think that was one of his big problems, was the composition of his coaching staff last year. He came in, he kept some guys in roles in order to try to help keep the roster intact. And those weren't necessarily, I think, the best roles for the program longer term. He would have been better off with a mass exodus, I think, of for the roster, because then everybody would have known last year was a reset season, and he wouldn't be under pressure now. Instead, by bringing back McMillan and Fifita, the expectations were such that his performance looks really bad, and he's under a lot of heat now.
Because you had your quarterback rankings earlier for the coming season.
Yeah.
And Leavitt was number one, and Fifita was in the middle of the pack. Fifita
Yep.
is gone after this coming season. And
Yep.
you just look at it and say, if you can't win with an experienced quarterback, it's probably time to push reset. And then the question of, is it a good job in Tucson? Well, it's a good job for somebody. Like, I'm rooting for him. I like their coach. I do like him as a person. But I'm stacking it up saying, man, that's got to be 6-7 wins down there, or else they're sitting there at 2-2 or 1-3. They're talking about competing basketball as usual.
Yes, they are. Now, I don't know that it would get to the point where they'd make an in-season change, but certainly there will be a lot of heat on him. And once those dark clouds start circling,
right,
it's hard to get rid of them. And it's hard to get the players to focus, because they hear it, they see it, they know it. If they sense that you're going to get fired, it is really difficult to keep them focused on the season and on each practice and each game and each meeting and each weightlifting session, because they know they're playing for a lame duck. They see it, especially today with social media. So he needs a hot start. Does he have to start 3-1 with that schedule? It would probably help. I don't know who game five is, but if they're 2-3, if they're 2-4, it can snowball very, very quickly.
Good stuff there, as always. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.